Today, we begin another series, and it's kind of a Lent series, being that this is the first Sunday of Lent. And what I thought would be fun to do is to look at the different characters, basically, at the cross of Jesus, or those who were affected by the cross when it happened originally. And so we're going to look at some of the disciples, we're going to look at the soldiers, we're going to look at Judas, we're going to go through these people and kind of get a sense of what they went through and also what message they should have received about the cross and about what they went through. And today we're going to look at Peter, who is, quite honestly, as you'll hear, was not at the cross, but was one who was there when Jesus was going through the trial. And so this begins, the verse we're going to read today is from Luke chapter 22, and I'll begin at verse 54 and read through verse 62. They arrested Jesus and took him away into the house of the high priest. Peter followed at a distance. A fire had been lit in the center of the courtyard, and Peter joined those who were sitting around it. When one of the servant women saw him sitting there by the fire, she looked straight at him and said, "This man was with Jesus." But Peter denied it. "Woman, I don't even know him." After a while, a man noticed Peter and said, "You're one of them, aren't you?" But Peter answered, "Man, I am not." About an hour later, another man insisted strongly, "There isn't any doubt that this man was with Jesus, because he's also a Galilean." But Peter answered, "Man, I don't know what you're talking about." At once, while he was still speaking, an rooster crowed. The Lord turned around and looked straight at Peter. And Peter remembered what the Lord had said to him, "Before the rooster crows tonight, you will say three times that you do not know me." Peter went out and wept bitterly. So for part of it, I want to show a picture of a pretty dramatic woman. One of the things that I think is impressive is when you hear stories about people who have overcome great adversity. You may not wear this, like Oprah Winfrey, when she was 14, had a baby, it died, she was homeless, and she's able to change her life. Bill Gates' first business was a bust, didn't work, the computer program he had failed. But yet, these two people continued on and have succeeded in life. Well, the picture here, hit play there, Dennis. This picture here is of Bethany Hamilton. And as you can obviously see, something ate her surfboard. She was out surfing with friends of hers, and she was laying on the board and just paddling with her arms, and a shark came and attacked her and bit the board and her arm. She ended up losing 60% of her blood before they got her to the hospital. And they made a tourniquet out of the surfboard strap that you tie around your leg, which saved her. And, she obviously lived through that ordeal. Now, what's interesting about this is that she went back to surfing. Many of us would say, "I'm not going in the water ever again." But she went back to surfing and ended up now she is winning competitions in surfing all around the world, coming in the top three places. She has done incredibly amazing in that. She was on the Amazing Race a couple years ago and ended up in the top third. She is a very committed and dedicated Christian who is living and also shares and speaks to people about her faith through this tragedy. The side note here is one of my secretaries at my previous church, her daughter got married on the beach in Hawaii with just the Justice of Peace and those two. And these two women came down the beach and offered to take a picture of their wedding, and it was Bethany and her mother. So she got to meet them and all that. But what I like about Bethany's
story is not only was it her faith that motivated her, but she also didn't stop. She was willing to go beyond the event in her life that could have radically destroyed it and made her life miserably, but she didn't allow that to happen. And today, when we talk about Peter, I think for me, Peter is one who obviously did not get attacked by a shark or did not get physically attacked in this event, but even more so, he faced a huge emotional and spiritual attack on his life, and it could have destroyed him. It could have made him into nobody. But yet, because I believe of the grace of God, it turned him into being the apostle that had literally brought us, the Gentiles, to faith. And so I want us to look at Peter and understand a little bit about Peter and connect with Peter. Because of any of the apostles that we know of and have, you know, read about, or the disciples, Peter's the one that we probably relate to the most. Peter's the one who has made the most outrageous mistakes. Peter's the one who has failed more than anybody else. And we can kind of relate to him. We can kind of get that sense about Peter. And so as we look at Peter, I want us to understand what he was like and what he did that we can connect with as we continue on our journey of Lent. Now, Lent is a very special time. And sometimes we've kind of distorted Lent, and we kind of take it nonchalantly. Us Presbyterians have never really gotten into Lent like our Catholic brothers and sisters, or Episcopalian sisters and brothers of those groups. But Lent still is an important time for reflection. Many of us think about what we need to give up during Lent. And unfortunately, the things that we give up are things that we selfishly need to give up anyways. And we don't need Lent to do it. But we think about what we could give up during Lent that hopefully would help us reflect on Jesus. But my challenge for us today is not to think about what we need to give up, but to reflect on how we give up Jesus in our lives. Because I really think that's the issue. That's what happened to Peter, is that he gave up Jesus in his life. And when he gave up Jesus, that caused huge, great shame and guilt in his life that almost destroyed him. And so Lent, for us, is a time when we start off by thinking, what is really the truth about me? What is the truth that makes me a lot like Peter? Peter represents us. He was this faithful disciple of Jesus who would blurt out things. He was the one that said, "Jesus, you are the Christ." Got the answer right. But then he blew it in the next sentence by saying, "Nobody will ever kill you. I will protect you." He was the disciple that at the Last Supper, instead of just wanting his feet washed, he blurted out, "Wash my whole body." And Jesus said, "No, I just need to wash your feet." He's the disciple when Jesus said, "One of you will deny me." Peter said, "I would rather die than deny you." And a few hours later, he denies him three times. So Peter comes and faces the truth about him. He has this arrogant intentions about him. You know, he stands there and he makes these great statements about what he will do, but then he fails over and over again. And you and I, many times, like Peter, have these arrogant intentions where we claim that we will follow Jesus. We claim that we'll be faithful. We'll claim that we're not going to eat chocolate for 40 days. And I want to ask for a raise of hand, but how many have already failed at your Lent fast already? We have these arrogant intentions, and yet we know that we don't live up to them. And so unfortunately, many of us lived with shame and guilt in our lives that paralyze us, that hold us back and keep us from truly living within what God has called us to be and do.
The next picture is this picture of Peter, and it's called Peter's Denial. And I think it's a poignant picture because here is those three people that asked if Peter knew Jesus. And Peter says, no, we've got the rooster there.
But more poignant than anything else is that Luke talks about that when Peter denied Jesus, Jesus was in that court. And when the rooster crowed in the background, you can barely see Jesus in the shadows with his head turned, looked at Jesus. If Peter wasn't already feeling guilty inside of his heart when he denied Jesus three times, it increased tenfold when the rooster crowed. It became debilitating when he looked and saw Jesus staring at him. And so Peter left weeping. The power of that look convicted Peter of his sin. I can remember growing up as a kid, we had some very, not super strict, but strict rules about table manners. We couldn't smack our lips. We had to finish our plate. We couldn't put our elbows on the table. And we kind of had this little ritual in our family that, you know, my dad would say, well, we're not going to go out to eat if you guys can't behave at the table with their table manners. And so, you know, this was drilled in our head. So much so that when I was in college and came home on a break, my family decided to go out to a restaurant, which was a big thing for us. And so at the restaurant, we're having a great time, and I'm sitting there, you know, being this college student, you know, eating away. And I looked up, and all my dad did was look at me. And I jumped and got those elbows off the table. He did not have to say a word. I knew I was caught. And I got my elbows off the table. I just can't imagine the degree that Peter must have felt when he saw Jesus look at him. Because Jesus did not have to say anything. Peter knew exactly that his arrogant intentions had got him in trouble again. So Lent calls us to look at ourselves and find out what really is true about us. We say we're going to do things. We say we're going to stand firm. We say that we're going to be faithful. And yet, we fail. And if Jesus turned and looked at us straight on, our guilt would be overwhelming. We would not feel that compassion. We would not feel that grace at that time. But we would feel that shame and guilt. And it can be debilitating. So not only is Lent a time for us to see that truth, but it also is a time for us to bring that unfaithfulness to the cross of Jesus Christ. And that's what Lent is to do. Each day as we go through this, we're preparing to come to the cross on Good Friday. Preparing to come before what Jesus Christ has done for us on that cross. And so we look at the truth of ourselves, but we also realize that we stand before this cross, knowing that we too have denied Christ. And the cross, what it does, again, it strips us of all pretense. It quiets the game playing or the excuse making that we have. It cuts out all the blaming or distracting or that, no, he did it or he made me do it type mentality. It's interesting to note that Peter is the only disciple who showed up at the court with Jesus. The rest of them had deserted Jesus. Peter at least went and followed Jesus even to the court as that disciple. In a sense, Peter was willing to be with Christ and to stand at that cross knowing what he had done. Like Peter, we have double-crossed God. We have failed him. We have denied him. Romans 3:23, all have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God. There's no getting around it. What Peter has done, we have done in our own lives. But here's an interesting thing. Even in the midst of that pain and suffering and guilt that Peter had, there was a solution already being made for him. Because of what Christ was about to do on the cross, Peter's shame and guilt was going to be removed. Let me help you illustrate that with another story about my dad. All right. Back when I got 16 and got my driver's license, unbeknownst to me, my mother and father made this pact that when I wrecked the car, they would not yell at me, but they would, you know, be gracious and work it out. They decided that, you know, by yelling at me would cause all sorts of problems, and they just made that pact and did it for the rest of my brothers and sisters as well. They didn't tell me that. And one day I wrecked the car, and I came home and, you know, came into the house, and I told my mom, because I knew that was safe, and she said, well, you're going to have to tell your father. And I thought to myself, I would much rather face a firing squad. Not that my dad would have hit me or anything, but I just knew how much I was going to disappoint him, how angry he was going to be that I wrecked his car. And those were the longest 10 steps into the living room I have ever taken in my life. And as I stood there, as he's sitting in his lazy boy rocker chair watching TV, and I am sobbing. I don't know how he understood the word I said. But I basically said, I wrecked the car. And I have never been so shocked in my life when he got up from the chair and said, okay, let's go look at it. It's one of those things where, what have you done with my father? And we spent the rest of the afternoon fixing the car. And basically, you wouldn't know that I wrecked it. But in that moment, for me, I think is much like what we face when we stand before the cross, what Peter faced when he realized what his denial was part of Christ dying on the cross, is that when I came before my father, I didn't know that a plan had already been made. I didn't know that grace was already in store for me. And so when I stood before my father, I expected the punishment that I deserved. I expected what I deserved. And when I received grace, I was overwhelmed. I was at peace. My shame and guilt for wrecking a car was erased. And my relationship with my father grew. And I think that is transferable to what we are doing in Lent. Because when we come and stand before the cross with our guilt and our shame, it's not that we become paralyzed with it. It's not becomes the point where God, you know, hits us across the head and said, I can't believe you did that, or banishes us. But we are shocked because we receive grace. We receive pardon. We receive acceptance. And that radically changes our perspective of who we are in relationship to Christ and who we are to be in this people, in this world. There's no running. There's no finger pointing. There's no cover-ups. There's no rationalization of what we've done. But we come to the cross knowing that a crucified, risen Savior has already forgiven us, has already put a plan to make us new. When Peter, he didn't go to the cross. He was among the disciples that I don't think he could have tolerated standing there below Jesus and look at Jesus in the eyes while he died on the cross. So he didn't go there physically, but emotionally, spiritually, I'm sure he had to. Because his life was changed. Peter, after the resurrection, was a power. He was a person who shared the gospel. He was a person who lived out God's compassion in all ways. Again, he's the reason why us, non-Jewish people, heard the gospel, because he brought the gospel to the Gentiles first. He was changed. And our call is that we will be changed too when we come to the cross before Jesus. Today, as part of communion, we have, we're going to do it differently and intentionally differently. I want you to come, in a sense, to the table, to the cross, to Jesus. And as you come to this time, to think about the shame and the guilt that you bring.